Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, in the second half, of course, we'll do the news. But first, San Diego Mayor Kevin Falconer comes in. A lot of thoughts on how to prevent homelessness. Innovative stuff, stuff they've used in San Diego. We take a very interesting look at that. First, LifeLock 5G is going to be a giant leap for mobile communications, offering lightning speed, more reliable connections, and higher quality streaming video as well. But what is the cost? I mean, there's going to be more targets to attack. It's going to be easier for state-sponsored surveillance. Lots of folks trying to rip off your information. So many threats in today's connected world. Just takes one weak link for criminals to get in. When personal information is exposed, someone could use it to commit identity theft. And let's not let that person be you. That's why we have LifeLock. Good thing LifeLock's identity theft protection adds the power of Norton Security to help protect against threats to your devices you may not see or easily fix on your own. It's LifeLock, right, Dawson?
Known to prevent all identity theft or cybercrime or monitor transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock with Norton Security can see threats you might miss on your own. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LifeLock and use promo code Adam for 10% off your first year. That's promo code Adam at LifeLock.com or 1-800-LifeLock for 10% off.
Thursday night, legendary FBI undercover agent Mike McGowan joins us at the Tenney Booze and Book Club. Enjoy exquisite Lebanese cuisine, grab a Mangria signature cocktail, and kick back while I read from Mike's memoir, Ghost, My 30 Years as an FBI Undercover Agent. Incredibly, my own employer, the agency I had worked like a dog and risked my life for, was now accusing me of stealing almost $200 million in heroin and cocaine and reselling it on the street like a common dope dealer. Not only was my perfect life over and the reputation I had worked so hard to establish in the toilet, if I couldn't find a way to prove my innocence, there was a strong possibility I'd end up in federal prison hanging with some of the asshole drug dealers I'd put away. I was in for the fight of my life. This Thursday night at Tenney in downtown Los Angeles, the Tenney Booze and Book Club. For more information, follow at Carolla Drinks and visit boozeandbookclub.com.
It's time for Nicaraguan Name That Movie with Adam's buddy Oswaldo. See if you can guess which movie this famous line is from.
The name is San Diego, which, of course, in German, means a gold vagina.
If you said Anchorman,
they named it San Diego,
which, of course, in German means a whale's vagina.
You're correct. Now, back to the show.
Well, let me hear Ozzy one more time. I cannot believe I worked with that guy. How do you build something with that?
The name is San Diego, which, of course, in German, mean a gole vagina.
I got a shout out.
Vagina?
Kevin Falconer here, the mayor of the aforementioned San Diego. A website, sandiego.gov, is where you go for any of the informations on city policies. Assumed office in 2014. Good to meet you.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Can you give us a reading on your name? Falconer.
Just as it is, right?
Yep.
Dr. Drew was impressed speaking to you about the homeless situation and what you're doing about it. I guess any city with a really good climate closest to the beach, kind of place, San Diego's the kind of place you could probably, if you wanted, just sleep in your own backyard half the days of the year and be kind of comfortable about it. That's going to, more so than Minneapolis, it's going to kind of attract homeless, right?
We have a great climate. Yes.
And so what are you guys doing to prevent this?
You know, and one of the things I'm really trying to do is break away from kind of the business as usual. And I made that decision a couple of years ago. New innovative programs, I had talked about it with Dr. Drew, really focusing on getting people off the street now, not letting a tent or a tarp substitute for a home on the sidewalk. You can't do that. And so we're really trying to do everything we can through our bridge shelters, which I think we're having some success with. What we're doing on some of the storage issues, clean San Diego.
What is a bridge shelter?
Getting people off the
street. I pass them all the time here in L.A. They're just bridges, and homeless people live under the bridge. Okay.
Literally a bridge shelter.
Mm-hmm. It's a shelter design that says, here's a bed, and you need to use it. And we have some great providers that are helping. I have three of them now, and we just had support for a fourth one. Controversial at the time when I started.
Every time you try to tell somebody to do something now, it's controversial. Like you try to get your kid to do homework or tie his goddamn shoes. Like, this is a controversial new
controversy
thing. Like, well, we're defending the border. Oh, it's so controversial. Like, what is controversial about rules and laws? It's a goddamn society. We all live in it. I'm controversially paying my taxes this year. It's part of living in a society. I don't get this thing where it's like, oh, you're punishing this guy? No, he's chosen to sleep on the street, and we're not letting him do that, which is not the same as randomly punishing people. We've taken some kind of weird turn where we're not into the rule of law anymore. I wrote a book called In 50 Years We'll All Be Chicks. This is chick think. We're going hard that direction, and somehow telling people they can't do things is somehow punishing them, although not that way if you want to tell everyone else what to do in terms of regulations.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I like to think it's common sense.
It is.
If you have a problem, address it. Don't wait 5 years, 7 years for a housing that, you know, hopefully is built. What are you going to be doing right now to help break that cycle? And focusing a lot on the substance abuse, mental health. But it is, you cannot say to folks, and I've tried to set this tone in San Diego, we're going to help you get off the street, but there is a spot for you to go. Sleeping in front of somebody's house or somebody's business is not an option.
Back to the bridge shelter. You got into it a little bit. How does it work?
We set up three of them with not just beds.
But controversial at the time, you said, when it was
controversial
first.
At the time, because people will say they want more homeless services, but they don't want it cited. Mm-hmm. And so what I said, look, blame me. I'm gonna pick the spot. I'm going to do it. We're going to have the providers to do that. But I'm also going to work with our police department to make sure that it's cleaner and safer environment after that bridge shelter is started than before it was there. I think we've been able to do that. And again, it's a spot where there's a place to go. There's going to be, you know, it's a clean environment. There's restrooms, there's showers. But most importantly, there's some folks that say, okay, what do we have to do to help break that cycle, whether it's mental health, whether it's substance abuse, whether it's help with housing vouchers. But that's having some success. And that's what the flip side is you have to go use the bridge shelters. You can't be out on the street, as I said, and doing some of the things that unfortunately go along with that.
San Diego is growing quite a bit, right? I mean, it's one of the larger cities now. I think, I don't know why, but it's in my head that I'm surprised that it's one of the bigger cities. Yeah.
Eighth largest city in the country.
Right. So, you know, my first impulse is like, oh, this is L.A., and then you're the little old San Diego, so how would you apply this? That sometimes we'll do that with, like, well, in Sweden, they have year-round health care for all the adolescent, whatever. And it's like, yeah, but they're so small. Yeah. But San Diego's big enough.
Yeah.
Big enough to work. Whatever model it is you're doing, you could apply that many other cities. What did you find? First off, I feel like there's homeless tourism now. Like, here's what I think. When you say, hey, we're not going to enforce whatever we're doing at the border, you then attract people to go, oh, okay, let's go get that across. It's just like if you said, we're not going to check IDs and we're going to employ people over here without, you know, we'll do it that way. You're essentially attracting people. And LA's homeless. To me, it seems like not people who grew up in L.A. who lost their home who are now sleeping in front of their home. It seems like we're ringing a dinner bell.
It's the homeless all-stars.
Which is like, come on down. There's no way that Seattle, L.A., and some of these other places that have just gone exploded in homeless population. This must be people who are formerly homeless or junkies other places going, let's go down to Seattle and live for free. Like, it must be attracting. And also, you can dissuade them as well, I'm assuming. I don't know how much of that
I really tried to set the tone. You're going to get help and support, but we're also going to have enforcement, I think, to your point, Adam. Look, it's the right thing to do for somebody who's on the street, but it's also the right thing to do for, folks that are running a small business or, whatever neighborhood that you live in San Diego. You deserve that same quality of life. And it's not, as you talk about some of the pushback and others, it's not humane to let somebody sleep on a tent in the sidewalk.
I don't get, well, first off, these people are dumb and they're pussies. I said it. When they talk about, like, hey, they go to the border and they're taking these kids out and they're separating them from their mom. It's like, okay, as opposed to walking from Honduras, like, what are you comparing it to? Like, they're going, they are traumatizing these kids. They're traumatizing these kids. Like, you don't think the walk from El Salvador was traumatizing? You don't think you're putting them in harm's way when you take an eight-year-old and you put them on top of a train? Like, what are you comparing this to? Because I'm comparing it to people sleeping on the street and doing drugs laying in the street. That seems dangerous to me. This feels like you care for these people.
It is dangerous to let that happen. I also very outspoken that I believe Prop 47 is a disaster for this state. It's a disaster for San Diego. Let folks that used to be a felony to have heroin and methamphetamine, now that's a misdemeanor. That is taking things the wrong way when you're trying to make a difference out there.
Well, we always do this deal where we're doing more and more of it. It's a huge mistake. This notion of, well, we're locking up all these drug addicts. How do we prevent that? And it's like, change the law so it's not illegal anymore, or felony, or whatever it is. And you go, okay. That's like saying, I was talking about before, we need to raise the speed limit. But it's like saying, my car's too slow. Well, then bust the speedometer glass and move the needle forward to 90. It's like, okay, but that's not fixing what's going on. And obviously, we're now feeling the repercussions of that. This thing where I know what happened. Here's what happened. We started grafting on feelings to everything. So we go, that guy's got to be locked up. Why are you being mean? Think about all the news. It's not cruelty. About policies anymore. It's like, you're being cruel. This is Hitlerian. We're having the concentration camps. It's like, there's a lot of feelings infused to policies. So nobody who's enforcing the law or making the law wants to be thought of as a bad person or racist or anti-mother or anti-child or whatever. But that's the campaign. So now people who were enforcing the law went, I don't want to be called fill in the blank. So no more law enforcement. And now it is spilling over. That's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a bunch of cowards who, by the way, are lying cowards who have to point a finger at everyone who's trying to enforce something and calling them, xenophobic, homophobic, like whatever it is. And it's working. It's getting them to stop doing what they're doing, but it's not helping the population we're trying to help. Yes? You agree with that?
Yes. Just answer the question. Yes.
No, it's a dynamic. It's a dynamic. It's as if I said, hey, kids, you got to do your homework and clean your room. And my wife went, why are you being mad? Why are you being mean? You're being mean. You're being mean. I'm like, because they need to do their homework. It's like, well, I don't like your tone. Yeah. Like, everything's about feelings.
You would never tell them to do their homework.
That's true.
This is an outlandish example.
Back to the bridge shelters. Is there like a, obviously there's a time though, right? You can be there for 30 days, 60 days, 90, something like that. And then
and we have one for families, one for single adults, one for veterans, and with one goal, not to stay in the bridge shelter, but to get transitioned out. And that's starting to work. We're having some success with that in San Diego. And Adam, to your point, welcoming other cities to come down and take a look at it. I think I'm going to be out with the mayor of Bakersfield tomorrow, who's coming down. We've had over 30 cities.
I assume Garcetti's already been there.
We've had some folks from Los Angeles that have come down. But to your point, it's about, I'm going to provide help as a city. We're a very compassionate city. We're going to provide help for an individual to get off the street, for your belongings to be placed in a storage so it's not on the sidewalk or, taped around an electrical box. We're going to have a program that we're really pushing hard. Again, it's all about doing things new, not the same way. Really focusing on family reunification. So talking about, hey, where was your family? How long have you been in San Diego? Do you have a sister or a brother somewhere?
Go find your home.
How can we help? And And our family reunification program, I'm going to dramatically expand that because guess what? That's having some of the best results.
What?
Of actually connecting.
Nobody. No podcaster could have ever anticipated. Hey, Dawson, you got to find the Zeppelin song where he goes, "Where's that confounded bridge?"
Yes.
We'll just play it every time. Brian wants to get back to the bridge. It'll just be funny. Yeah. We'll do it, and you'll ask the mayor some bridge shelter questions. And
I'm interested in solutions, but keep pontificating.
How about the family man over here?
I feel like...
It is the family. It's all... find the family, get them back with their family.
It works.
Everyone, that is your shelter. That is their shelter. The futon in the basement can be the bridge shelter for the family if you can get them reunited.
Absolutely. And over the past year and a half, 2 years, the family reunification's had about 1,500 folks that have been successful and stayed with their families. That's the idea. Again, it's not necessarily I have to build a house or an apartment for everyone who is on the street. It's about how do I connect you with help and services, and how do we actually make this work?
How could that possibly work? Like, we're going to build a giant structure and have all these homeless people who are junkies and insane just go live in this structure.
What could go
wrong? Yeah, what could go wrong?
To that point, a lot of folks talk about housing first. Yes, we need more housing, but it's not housing only. If you are not providing some of the mental health, particularly on a lot of these issues that we're dealing with, you can't just have somebody meet an apartment one day. It's not going to work. Right. And so we're spending, a lot of time and effort trying to say, all right, we got to help break some of these cycles. We have to, get somebody in a supportive environment, because I'm not interested in saying you're off the street for a week or two and then go right back out there. That doesn't do anybody any good, at least of which is the individual.
I read the website of our city's mayor, Mayor Garcetti, and he states that cost of living and low-cost housing or availability of housing, these are all the problems that face the homeless. He never gets to the addiction and the mental disease part of the whole thing. What is your experience?
They're all factors. Do we need more housing? Yes. And I'm actually trying to make it easier to construct more housing along transportation corridors in San Diego. Very aggressive, so folks can actually afford it and stay in San Diego, get a job. But you also have to recognize that it's not just a housing issue. Back to what we were just talking about, if you're not addressing some of the mental health and some of the substance abuse, we're not going to make a dent. And at the end of the day, it's about helping folks get off the street, as I said, not just for a couple days, but helping them make that transition to get back on their feet, back with their family, into a job, into stability. But at the same time, sending a very strong message about what we will accept and what we will not accept in terms of our quality of life in our city.
Well, it becomes at a certain point, if you're going to be homeless, you may be down on your luck, but you do have options. You maybe have the ultimate option. I'm going to sleep wherever I want at some point this week.
We're all chained to the same bed, the same room,
right?
Every night.
And if you make it a little less attractive to go to San Diego to be homeless, you'll just stop in L.A. or you'll go to Portland. Or that's kind of – it's sort of like – thieves, robbers, house robbers, break-ins, they're not really particular about whose house they break in, but they see one has a dog and has an NRA sticker in the window, and the other has a picture of their cats. And the person goes, screw it, I'll just go over to that house. Like, it doesn't take 80%. It takes 10% to just sort of push them over that way, and then they don't come back. Dawson, you have the Led Zeppelin song. What song is that?
The Crunge.
Have you seen the bridge?
I've seen the bridge.
Where's that confounded bridge?
All right. That's your cue, bro.
Back to the bridge shelter. Make us all feel bad and explain how much or little red tape and bureaucracy, how long does it take to get one up and running? Imagine if it happened here in L.A., it would be talking about maybe doing it 10 years later.
Right.
No, we stood some of ours up in several months.
Jesus
and I
Christ.
Said I picked all the sites and the locations.
Was there some NIMBYism? Well, some not in my backyard?
In every single one.
I imagine there would be.
And I said, blame me. I'm the mayor. I'm going to make the decision. We're going to put it here. But I'm also, as I said, going to provide the help and the support and the enforcement around that. That's going to make this a cleaner environment. And you know, a better environment. In fact, one of the programs that we run out of one of our largest bridge shelters by Alpha Project is the Wheels for Change, where during the day they're having some of the folks that are in the shelter going out, helping to clean up the neighborhood or different neighborhoods, making some money doing it, trying to get a little bit of dignity, you know, self-respect back, and showing that, hey, here's how we can do that. So we've really tried to set that tone with the bridge shelters. There was a lot of pushback and a lot of pushback from some of my colleagues on the city council who said,
just rich white guys.
I don't know about this, Mr. Mayor, and I don't want it here. And just 2 weeks ago, they put in funding in the budget for a fourth shelter. Again, that's not the be all end all, but it's starting to work. When you match it with some of the other programs that we're doing, as I said, in our neighborhood policing unit, I think we're starting to make a difference.
Let's get this speed limit raised. Can we do that? 35, so archaic, and 55 and 65. That was your grandma's speed limit.
The bridge shelter's cute, but let's talk about the real problem.
Let's talk about what's important.
Let's help the taxpayers get to work in a more timely fashion. What do we do about the bay and the water and the trash and all the stuff that's heading out to sea? I think here in LA, it just goes down the storm drain and kind of ends up in the bay.
In El Segundo.
Yeah, in El Segundo. Now, you know, obviously San Diego, big water town, big oceanfront town. Yeah, what are absolutely. You guys thinking about with that?
And one of the biggest things we're doing just in terms of outfall and is we're pushing forward on Pure Water, which is going to be one of the largest water recycling programs in the West Coast right now for sustainability, for environmental, to your point, but also so we're less reliant on our good friends in Los Angeles when it comes to water. Mm-hmm. We can create our own source.
You don't
source.
Want our water.
We're, again, trying things different and hopefully making a difference.
How does it work for you? When's the next election?
I'm in my second term, and so I have a year and a half.
Nice.
There won't be another.
Milk it.
Oh, is it a two-term thing?
It is, yeah.
Oh, I feel... Well,
that's not all big cities.
Not all, right?
Some go on forever.
Some are different. Yeah, absolutely.
Because I feel like Tom Bradley was like mayor here for a million
years. Villaricosa wouldn't go away.
Yeah, Villaricosa wouldn't go away. We tried to pay him. He's just... We'll never left. Oh, God. So what? Are we going to have
how Garcetti? How is Villaricosa not running for president? There's 22 Democrats.
I don't... He is...
This is his time.
He is so bad. Tom Bradley, 20 years.
There it is.
Black man from the early 70s to the early 90s was the mayor here in Los Angeles.
There you go.
They still didn't finish the terminal at LAX during those 20 years.
Bradley International.
They still had some zoning issues.
Right, yeah.
And there was some environmental impact reports they were working on pushing through. That's the other thing, too. Like, all we do, so Los Angeles and California, all we do is make regulation after regulation after regulation when it comes to building. I've been complaining about this for 1 million years. You try to pull a permit on something and they tell you all the reasons why you can't do everything. They've taken that system and they've mucked up the work to the point where it's years. And I've talked to guys who run fast food joints and stuff like that. And they go, I won't even come to California. It's a waste. It takes too long. It's just... It can't be done. We can't turn a profit. We can't do it in a timely way because of regulation. Then the people who are leading the charge in all the regulations want to know why we don't have enough low-cost housing. Well, because of all the regulation you put into place. So we're going to have to peel some of that back. And they're like, we don't want to touch that. And it's like, well, then you'll get no low-cost housing. What do you think about that subject,
Mayor? I think you're right on.
What?
Stick around.
Well, look, the approach that I've taken in San Diego, look, if you need more housing, which we do, you have to make it easier to actually build it and construct it. And if it takes 5 to 7 years to do that, you're not helping anybody. The cost is going to go higher. So what do you actually do about that? Well, I mean, not to get too far in the weeds, but we've taken things that used to be a process 5 to a process 3, which means you can get a permit over the counter. A big push that I'm doing right now in San Diego is to do a citywide EIR. That's going to allow multifamily construction, again, allowing transit-oriented zones, that you can do it by right if you meet the community plans that we've already passed. So if you don't have to go through all of the process and council hearings and others, that will make it incredibly faster.
Right.
And why I'm having to do an entire citywide EIR to do that is because what happens, to your point, a lot in California is that CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act, is used as a weapon to stop good projects all over the place because people don't want this or the people don't want that. And so I think this is going to be a game changer in San Diego.
EIR, Environmental Impact Report. And yes, we used to have a lot of production in Los Angeles. Then we started charging everyone way too much in taxes and tariffs and putting in a lot of regulations and stuff like that. And everyone just picked up and moved to Atlanta. So you then cut dramatically back on your production. At a certain point, the good folks who run Los Angeles, because they're super greedy, they're dumb, but they're greedy first, went, hey, we want this money back. They didn't want to do the right thing. They didn't miss a Spielberg or Katzenberg or any of the names that end with Berg. They were like, we want your money. So what they did is they eased up on the regulations and they eased up on the taxes and then the runaway productions. And they're not runaway. They're forced away. They're shunned productions. Right. They didn't run away. They were pushed away. You then said, oh, come back. We'll let you keep a little more of your money, and we won't be riding all your vans, parking tickets, and having to pull permits and everything for everything on the street all the time and everything. And they went, fine, we'll come back, and we'll start doing it. And then L.A. went, good, we'll take some of that money. Okay, you do the same thing for building, L.A., in California, you've driven away all the developers because they're in the business of making money and they can't run their business with all your regulations. So good. You got past your skis. You made a mistake. Now apologize, roll some of it back, they'll come back and they'll start building, or they won't. But don't tell us you want low-cost housing and have all the regulatory stuff.
Amen.
Oh, boy, that's a good note to go out on.
Vice Mayor Adam Curl.
Future Mayor of San Diego.
Oh, no.
Yeah, come on down, Adam. We're ready for you.
I looked down. I saw Comic-Con's on the way. Nerd infestation.
That's going to be a big windfall for San Diego.
Comic-Con. Yeah. I know. You have to pretend like you like
Comic-Con
it.
Comic-Con is great.
You have to pretend.
Look at him. Come on. The Chargers are gone. Give him a break. Comic-Con's all he's got.
Farmer loves cosplay.
The Padres, please.
Three out of four of the Dodgers.
He loves it as much as like Sean Connery when they force him by contract to go down there, talk to the nerds. That'll be next Thursday through Sunday. How big is this thing gotten?
It's great. It's massive.
What?
It's over 100,000 folks that come down just for for Comic-Con. But I mean, there's several hundred more that just come down to be kind of part of the scene.
What year did it start?
It's about in its 50th year.
50th year.
Yeah.
I feel
look at this dork.
Look at this guy. This Trekkie.
You've sold your soul.
There are so many uncomfortable white guys in that picture.
That was a great morning.
I'll bet you every single guy in the mayor's cabinet calls it Star Trek.
Did the gentleman next to you put the ears on? Please tell me he did.
50 years.
Yeah, he did.
It's one of those things where it's been on for 50 years, but it seems like...
Been aware of it for about 12.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really heating up.
It is. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's people come from all over the world, all of the new productions and just...
the studios, they got a premiere, their next tentpole movie, here's 5 minutes of footage or whatever.
It's not just comics. I mean, when I went however many years ago, the entire cast of Breaking Bad, the entire cast of Sons of Anarchy, everybody goes.
It's a big deal in San Diego, and we're proud of it.
Yeah, sure. Tickets at comic-con.org. Listen, it's a nerd invasion. We don't need that. Now, the good news is, for all the towns that the nerds came from, they get to breathe a sigh of relief.
That's right. They can finally breathe easy for a weekend.
You're all invited.
These losers are gone for
come
a long
on down
weekend.
Experience it.
And fairly crime-free.
Come to San Diego and spend some money, please.
Yeah, it's a polite crowd, too.
All right, Mayor, we will take ourselves a break. We'll do the news right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Need news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, Emmy Award-winning actor Rip Torn died Tuesday, which we touched on earlier. His representatives have confirmed that. He was 88. Known for his work in films, TV, stage, a veteran actor, won an Emmy for his role as Artie on The Larry Sanders Show. He was also known for his work in the Men in Black movie series, earned Oscar and Tony nominations, of course, played Albert Brooks, I guess you could call him lawyer, in one of our collective favorite movies, Defending Your Life. And if you aren't familiar with that role, here's a quick clip. This is him discussing with Albert Brooks what's going on and how he got there.
When you use more than 5% of your brain, you don't want to be on Earth, believe me. Well, not that your takeout places aren't lovely, but there are many more exciting destinations for smarter people. Now, being from Earth as you are and using as little of your brain as you do, your life has pretty much been devoted to dealing with fear.
It has?
Well, everybody on Earth deals with fear. That's what little brains do.
So condescending.
What are little brains?
That's what we call you folks behind your back.
That is the best.
Forgive me.
It's so goddamn true. All the little brains just spending whatever they got up there on fear.
Mm-hmm.
Just thinking about fear.
Avoiding
fear. All the time.
Holding themselves back.
Everything is just fear-based with all the little brains. All the smart guys I know who have the bigger brains aren't fear-based at all.
Well, it's a cliche, but it's true. Like, think about it. They say the things you regret most are the things you didn't do rather than things you did. Right? Think about it in your own lives. Like, you don't regret things you did for the most... Occasionally, of course. But for the most part, it's the things you didn't do.
I always just think it's that super, like... I always think about it with my own family. Like if you ever say to my mom, like, "Oh, I'm writing for the Oscars," she'll go, "Oh, that sounds stressful." Or I'm gonna go in a car race. She'll go, "Oh, that sounds like a lot of work." Yeah. Or, "Aren't you scared you're gonna crash the car?" Like, it's always a "What if something goes wrong?" Right. And it's like, well, what if something goes right?
You could choose to focus on that, or there are many better aspects.
You just do nothing your whole life because of the potential of something going wrong, which is an aspect of every endeavor that involves leaving the house. So stop using your little brain and stop being so fear-based all the time. It's crazy. It's also, you just look at all the news and all the all the true crime stuff and all the stuff. Like, everyone is just trying to scare everybody all day, every day. It's driving me nuts. I don't know why that Piper is so attractive to us. You know, I don't know why we hear the sound of that fear Piper and we go, "Oh, it's off in the distance. Let's follow it. Let's go over the mountain and see who's there." It's like, why?
Yeah.
Why not just go live it? I don't get it. They're selling it. I mean, that's what they're selling. Both sides constantly selling 90% of everything on TV is some fear-based. We're selling you outdoor lighting. They show Prowler coming around the window at night. Like, everything is fear. Fear-based.
There's a radio commercial for, you know, new garage doors, and it's constantly about, if you have an old garage door, it's going to snap and kill your family.
Oh, yeah.
That's a big one on the radio.
It's a guillotine attached to the front of your house. Right. You want to know, it's funny. I was just talking to the Indy driver, Scott Dixon, but the happiest, calmest guys are the race car drivers and the MMA fighters, because they're not fear-based people. So if you're going to get into the octagon, or you're going to climb into an Indy car and go 231 miles an hour for 5 hours at Indy, you're not a fear-based person. Mm-hmm. Now, you may be scared of scorpions or spiders or something. You may have your thing, but you're not a fear-based. Yeah. Now, the guy in the octagon would be scared in the Indy car, although would probably look at it as a rush, and the Indy driver would not want to get into the octagon. But they're still not fear-based people, and they actually walk around a little less agitated and a little less fight-or-flighty and a little less, well, this ain't going 250 miles an hour, and I don't have to worry about it.
They embrace danger for a living.
Right. But as I now think about it, it attracts non fear-based people right. to the sport, right. to the profession, and they're much more even as you just catch them in the middle of the week.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
Defending Your Life is streaming on Cinemax, by the way. If you're a subscriber, you can watch it. Also worth a $3 rental across the industry. Also, we should point out he was Alan Tudyk's co-star in Dodgeball.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of people who are not fear-based, Rip Torn was not a fear-based human. he won an almost $1 million in a defamation lawsuit against Dennis Hopper, who claimed that Torn pulled a knife on him one time. I think they were actually meeting. I think this was for Easy Rider, like a chemistry test thing. Mm. And that role went to Jack Nicholson. He reportedly attacked Norman Mailer with a hammer during an improvised scene in the movie Maidstone. Mailer ended up biting off a chunk of his ear. We have that, by the way. It's insane.
We have a tape.
This is like raw footage of it happening, and it's kind of a movie, but happening in real time.
You say Norman Mailer,
yeah,
but maybe he thought his last name was Naylor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hammer!
You should take a hammer.
That's a very
that could
good
be
point.
Just a confusion.
If you're a hammer, it looks like a Naylor.
Well, like, you know,
if
we're
you
doing
watch
Falconer,
this, that would be hard to prove.
Falconer,
yeah, right. Right, sure.
Maybe it was one of those situations. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right,
yeah.
We have footage of that.
It's 9 minutes. I got a chunk of it. Tell me
a
when you want to. Yeah, thank you. When you're done. But this is basically first just a clip of, and you can't really tell if this is like a scene or if he's just kind of doing this on his own. Rip Torn's kind of contemplating in a field, and then he picks up a hammer and goes after Norman Mailer and calls him Norman, I think. So, you know, this is a movie.
He's thinking. He's got his eyes closed. It's a very young...
He goes up to him, starts beating Norman next to a tree.
Wow.
Norman Kingsley, you must die, not Mailer. Not Mailer. I don't want to kill Mailer, but I must kill Kingsley.
Wow.
And they go at it. He has a hammer in his hand.
Wow, he's going at him with a hammer. Oh, and he just bit his ear off.
Mailer's wife comes running over, or someone goes, what are you doing?
No, baby. You know, you trust me. You trust me.
Wow.
You trust me.
It's like some acting exercise gone awry.
You trust me.
Oh, Matt, let's never let this happen to us.
Promise.
All right. I don't want to bite your ear off.
And then he kind of calms him down, but doesn't stay calm for long.
I'm sorry.
Try to hit him with a hammer.
Sorry. Please get off. No. Let me hit you. No.
Oh, he's trying to kill him with a hammer.
Hey! Will you cut this fucking thing out?
They're scrapping hard on the ground.
Holding a hammer 4 feet away.
Yeah.
It's the craziest thing ever. Wow.
This goes on for maybe another minute.
That's the weirdest piece of tape I've ever seen in my life.
I was holding a camera 2.5 feet away.
And then you can scroll through, because once he finally gets up and everyone tries to calm down, Rip is just still in the zone. He's like, yeah, baby, what do you mean? What's the problem, baby?
Wow.
He's on drugs.
Yeah.
There's got to be something.
What is this?
That's the wife?
I think so.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wow.
It's crazy.
The kids are crying.
Yeah. That's Norman's kids.
Why are those kids there?
I don't know. That's there's three
God,
people.
The 70s are weird.
I don't know, man.
This is nuts.
Oh, yours
is crazy. What movie are they filming?
Maidstone?
What year was this? Was it the 70s?
I mean, it looks like it.
Tried to hit him with a hammer.
Maidstone came out in 1970.
I really did, baby. I had to do that. You know that. Look what you did to my kids.
Oh, look!
By the way...
Look at you dead!
All right, let's pause it.
Crazy.
Look, let me just tell you guys about batting average. When someone says, you tried to hit me in the head with a hammer, and the response is, hey, baby, you know I had to do it. You rarely are greeted with a, well, when you're right, you're right.
You got me there.
When you put it like that.
Touché. You're right.
There you go.
I wasn't prepared to accept many responses to that,
right.
that charge.
Well, let me try this. But the claw end, really? Or are you just, when you're right, you're right. I'll just walk away.
Hey, it's just a hammer. Well, anyway, you slice it.
Come on, baby. You knew it had to be done. Yeah, I guess so. You know, I'm really going to look inside because you're about the fifth person today who's attacked me with a hammer, and I must be doing something to attract that. I'm going to internalize these hammer attacks.
Yeah.
I've been externalizing for far too long, and perhaps That's what's bringing it on.
My instinct is to call you irresponsible. My children are right over there. My wife's right over there.
Right.
Really, who's the irresponsible one?
Right. You bring your family to a hammer attack. That's on you.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, I owe you an apology.
I should say.
Yes.
Yeah, bizarre. And then in 2010, when he was 79, he was charged with carrying a loaded gun while drunk and attempting to break into a branch of his local bank.
There goes a man.
And I think he fell asleep in it, and he thought it was his house.
It was his bank, to be fair.
That's a good point. His money's there.
You know, people do say, this is my branch and my bank, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you have your bed and your bathtub.
Your friendly neighbor.
You don't ask permission to get in it, do you?
Far from it.
No.
But especially with a gun.
He is very beloved and will be missed.
Not by Mailer,
probably. or Dennis Hopper.
Or Hopper, yeah.
But the rest of us, the rest of those little people.
Mm-hmm.
So fans of Jesse Pinkman and Walter White are not super happy right now, according to ET Online. At the end of June, Aaron Paul and Bryan Cranston caused this big stir among diehard Breaking Bad fans among us when they posted this black and white photo of two donkeys with the teasing caption, "Soon." Then, last week, the former co-stars upped the ante. They posted a picture of themselves crossing the shallow creek in the water with holding their shoes, and it said, "Even sooner." Naturally, all the teases, everyone thought this was buzz about the movie coming out, the Breaking Bad movie, or some exciting project that we can watch.
It's like a Sneaky Pete thing?
Well, they did just announce, they took to Instagram, and announced their new Mezcal company called Dos Hombres.
I'm in!
So people were pretty disappointed, pretty pissed. They called it a dick move. They said, you know, I'll be talking trash about you, but while sipping this new Mezcal.
Can we get the Mezcal?
That
is it available for sale?
It is. They said it's smoky, and they found it in this little tiny town.
I'm saying, is it available for sale?
Yes.
Can one purchase this?
That's the point. Yeah, this is their new company. But despite the actor's misdirect on social media, TVLine.com, here's some silver lining news, reports that it does seem the movie is coming eventually. Paul will reportedly reprise his role as Jesse Pinkman. Apparently, the film went into production already in Albuquerque. So everyone just calm down and enjoy some nice mezcal.
Yeah.
I feel like Cranston was in every single movie for about a 4-year period.
He was humping it for a while.
And I think he's probably taking his foot off the accelerator a little bit. Just
counting his money.
Trying to catch a breath.
Well, if you see what happened with George Clooney and his, was it tequila?
I just bought a bottle of liter 24 hours ago.
There you go.
Casamigos. That stuff flies off the shelves.
It's really good.
They keep it behind the glass, right, at the Ralph's, at the liquor store, the grocery store. So I had to, you know, buzz and get the manager to come over. And he's like, I'm like, oh, yeah, can I have the Blanco Casamigos? He's like, people love this stuff. I'm like,
what is different about it?
I don't drink it. Christy does.
I do, too.
But it's very smooth. I've had sips of her cocktails.
It's much milder.
Very mild, very smooth, very drinkable. It's not harsh like tequila that we all knew in college.
Yeah. Yeah, and then there's mezcal, which is not tequila, but I always used to say mezcal tequila when I was Tijuana.
Pretty sure it's both from the agave plant. I love mezcal, and my grandma says mezcal, and it's smoky and kind of not sweet, but smoky and smooth.
Tastes different than tequila.
Yeah, instantly different. You could tell them apart instantly.
And then there was the brand called Mezcal Tequila,
which
had the worm in it. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Old school.
So that was a big deal. You got to eat the worm.
Yeah. Is that a thing
anymore? I've heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like
a tribe. Not for your tribe. The Jews aren't into eating lot of tequila soaked insects.
No.
It's been a while since we did a side by side blind taste test.
We should do that with the tequila and the mezcal.
A little Dos Hombres and Casamigos.
Yeah, Max Pata. But when I used to go to Tijuana and buy the tequila with the worm in it, what was that called? Was that mezcal tequila?
I think that's a semi-common thing. Are there some that have scorpions at the bottom? Like, I think that's kind of
dumb. I'm not a weirdo.
Yeah, come on.
All I did was snort a caterpillar. In the 80s, it was like a yellow and red bottle or an orange and yellow bottle or something like that. And I think we called it mezcal, and it had the worm, and it's like, yeah, eat that worm. All right. Well, I'll let you look that up, and I'll tell you about Geico. Everyone's got the to-do list. How about you save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance And you don't have to go anywhere. Just go to geico.com. 15 minutes could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Take that money, get yourself some nice, smooth, smoky mezcal and enjoy it by the fire tonight, but not too close. Go to geico.com, spend a few minutes and find out just how much you could be saving on your auto insurance. Now, they would always say eat the worm, but as I remember looking at it, it wasn't a worm. It was more like a small caterpillar.
Oh.
Like it had little legs and stuff like that.
Centipede?
It was like a little green. No, it looked like a caterpillar.
It looked like a mealworm, like a maggot kind of.
Delish. Yeah. Monte Alban?
Mezcal. Nah, I don't think it was that one, but it was close. By the way, when I said yellow and orange label, I'm sure that's every single tequila bottle out of Tijuana. But yeah, the one that had the worm in it, probably the most famous one with the worm in the 70s, 80s. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, a couple of, there you go. You can pick for your own.
Yeah, there. I think Sana that mezcal.
Rojo.
Yeah.
Ooh, there it is.
There's right a worm the in the bottom.
Yeah. It's a substantial size.
Yeah. By the time
it's a grub.
By the time you got to the worm, you had no qualms with the worm. That's what I want to say. It was at the bottom.
That worm is so tough.
That's right.
Well, a couple of problems in the sky. First, a Delta Airlines flight from Atlanta to Baltimore was forced to make an emergency landing in Raleigh, North Carolina on Monday. And a passenger, we were looking at the video right now, shows what happened. So this dude named Logan Webb looked out his window, was terrified when he saw what appears to be the engine spinner completely detached and rattling around while flames swirl around inside. Other passengers reported the smell of burning metal filling the cabin. The pilot was able to safely land the plane. Passengers were later placed on another flight to Baltimore, but that's what he saw when he looked out his window.
Yeah, that spinner is like the size of a thermos, and it's like the pointy part in the front of the blades, and it came loose, and the air is keeping it in the bay,
right?
And which has got to freak everyone out, and all those engine parts coming apart, and everything's got to freak everyone out.
Reassuring that it didn't like come apart, though, right? Disintegrate or whatever.
That's reassuring, and then also the part where it's always surprising when they can land on one engine.
Yeah.
It seems so counterintuitive because you think one side of the plane is propelling the plane.
It's just flying circles.
Why wouldn't it just spin around like Gamera or whoever the flying turtle was in the old Godzilla movies? Like the flying turtle, Max Pata.
It's Falconer.
The flying turtle in the old Godzilla movies, all they did was put like a bottle rocket and a turtle and they throw it and it just goes spinning around.
Wow.
But you think the plane would just go spinning around. It's only got power coming out of, and you can kind of like, you could kind of picture, it was Gamera. If you had an automobile and both rear wheels were producing power and then all of a sudden one wasn't and the other was, you could feel it wanting to turn that other direction, but you also go, well, I'll just turn the wheel a little and compensate for it. Air is like that. Like, it's so much harder and thicker, and there's so much. I mean, just think of the fact that, think about what one of those planes weighs. Think about all the contents and all the fuel, and think about the fact it just lifts off the ground. That's how thick air is. I mean, that's how much lifting air can do. So I think when the plane starts to go one way with just a one motor and they just go full aileron this way and full whatever flap that way, the air is so hard that they can straighten it out.
Here's Gamora. Or Gamera.
Gamera. Yeah. Oh, he's got rockets under him. Oh, and he's spinning around. That's how Gamera flew. He's a spinning turtle.
He's a battle bot.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So, good.
Yeah.
What do they do, Max Pata? When they lose an engine on one side, they must have to just have the flaps go. Like, so if you lose the left side engine and you're the pilot, you're going to start turning to the left if you lose the left side engine. So you must have to do with the control surfaces on the wings and the rudder and everything like that. You must have to turn like right.
Manually, yeah.
Just like physically put everything like you're turning right for as much as you're going to turn left. I mean, that makes sense to me, but I don't know. Sorry.
Well, while he's looking at that, another problem in the sky is a Ryanair flight turned into, quote, hell on earth, according to several passengers who were on the flight from England to Croatia on Saturday. So according to Fox News, it was a 3.5-hour flight carrying 70 drunk attendees to this festival called Hard Island Music Festival, reportedly yelling at each other the whole time, ignoring the crew, vomiting everywhere. And by the way, one of the passengers said there was no alcohol served on this flight to them. So they came in pre-partied and ready to go. Their rowdy behavior delayed the flight by an hour.
Oh my God, it's exciting.
That's right. Passengers said it was like being in a jungle with wild animals. Ew. The crew members eventually contacted police. They met him in Croatia. Three of the men arrested and escorted off the plane once it landed.
Yeah, maybe it's their mistake for saying no booze on this flight.
Oh, it flew from Manchester, those drunks.
Yeah.
Everybody. It's always funny. I always do a where I have this bad math. Like when we were talking the other week and you're like, a stowaway flew out of a British Airlines flight when they're flying into Heathrow. And I'm like, what? The flight left Mozambique. I'm like, okay. All right. Yeah. Okay, now I got it.
Makes sense.
I always do the math where they're landing, but it's not. That's where they took off is where you have to do the math.
Yep. Yes.
Right.
Yes, Chris.
All right. So, a plane with twin engines, it can do pretty much everything with just one engine, and the pilots would have to adjust with the throttle and trim to compensate. So one engine going off is not as big of a deal.
No, it isn't. But I feel like it would be a bigger deal that they compensate. The computer probably compensates.
Yeah, they say they compensate with adjustments in throttle and trim. Well, and there's a power imbalance.
Well, in that case, that guy's no hero.
So we talked the other day about Donald Trump not being able to block people on Twitter. Well, he's not going to be the only one. It's very possible that's going to take heat for that. Ex-New York Democratic Assemblyman and radio host Dove Hickind said Tuesday that he plans to sue Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez for blocking Twitter users based on their views.
Every elected official should be held to this.
Absolutely. This follows the federal appeals court ruling earlier Tuesday banning Trump from doing this. Hickind said that his suit will be similar to the one filed against Trump, writing, quote, "She uses that account for political and policy commentary, so to shun a citizen off from her statements is a problem, as well as blocking me from petitioning her or seeking redress." She has over 4.5 million followers. That's not a new standard.
Yeah. You know, we got a lot. You know, there was a great Don Adams film. They made a Get Smart film.
Mm-hmm.
Starring Don Adams. They made Get Smart the movie.
Okay.
And I think the first one was called The Nude Bomb. There's like a bomb that we're going to make everyone nude.
Diabolical.
So it's high concept?
Yeah. Well, it's back when you could get some fannies in some seats before Pornhub and internet, all that stuff. Right. You know, you could get a few people in the theater if you thought you're going to see some boobies. The Nude Bomb. Was a movie.
Yeah.
Is that where The Naked Gun came from? Was that a takeoff?
Can't be, but who knows. But I think we need to light off a dignity bomb in this country. Like the thing about people think that the nukes, they blow up when they hit the ground. Mm-hmm. They blow up above the ground and just spray everywhere. And I think we need to do that. We need to unring some of these bells. We need to reel it in just a little bit. Everyone's suing everyone and blocking everyone. And speaking of AOC, like, you want to talk about now? I don't think she has a small brain. I think she uses her medium-sized brain.
5%,
3%. Torn would argue that she does.
She scares the small brainers, and like, she comes out of the detention facility or whatever it is on the border, and she's like, "Those women were drinking from the toilets, and I feared for my safety." And it's like, how did you fear for your safety? You have folks walking around in ties with reflective sunglasses. Why were you scared in there? And then the question is were you scared? Or did you see people drink from toilets? Or is that working on the scared small brainers? Right. And you are the puppet master of the small brainers. So you're going to get all these people scared, and then you'll control them. Once you scare them, you can control them. It was a crazy thing. And I never know why there's no follow-up questions. Like, what do you mean you were scared? And
what
who
did you
was
think
drinking from the toilet? The nude bomb trailer's funny.
Oh.
Says right. Who?
Let's see it.
Nations of the world. This is chaos.
Chaos.
We have in our power a devastating new weapon, rendering the entire world completely new.
The fate of the entire world is in your hands.
Maxus Mart is a fool and a bump.
You cannot be too careful with your gun.
Are you all right?
Miss me by that much.
Okay. All right.
It's always weird when you have a catchphrase. Just missed it by that much. And we used to say that back and forth when I was a kid all the time. It's our form of entertainment. It's also, it always strikes me as funny that Hugh Hefner, at the later part of his life, would just have guys like Don Adams come by and like have movie night and play cards.
Yeah, he's big on movie night.
And he must have said to like the 23-year-old runaway peroxide blondes, like, good news, big celebrities coming over tonight. Was it Leonardo? Who's taking Mike on his side?
Have you seen the nude bomb?
All right, ladies, you sitting down? Average age, 21 and 7 months. Don Adams.
Oh, you mean Don Draper, John Hamm? Oh, my God.
I don't know those names, but we have the Don Adams coming here.
Don Adams.
Tonight, we're playing Pinochle at this kitchen table.
Yay?
Oh, come on, sweetheart. You're born in 1996. I think you know who Don Adams is.
Sure. Who doesn't know the beloved and smoking hot Don Adams?
Don Adams. Oh! He's one of the biggest, greatest comedic minds of our generation.
Mm-hmm.
Chaos, control.
Mm-hmm.
Mel Brooks worked on this.
Who? Mel who?
Mel's coming as well. He's gonna
oh,
be
Brooke
with
Brooke. Oh, I love her.
Brooke Burke?
Yes.
I don't know who that dude is.
Oh.
Look, it's a big deal.
Okay.
Now, Don's nurse slash handler says we only have a couple hours with him. So whatever that means, but you got to get busy with him. You get busy.
Oh, hi, Hef. I just let myself in. The door's. Oh, hello.
Don Adams.
Yes, it is me, star of stage and screen, Don Adams. What's your name?
Are you Hef's uncle?
Oh, no. That's good stuff.
All right. Now, please. You've seen Get Smart.
Get Smart.
How many times have I yelled at you, Get Smart?
Yeah, that's what I thought you were saying.
Get smart,
get
bitch.
Get smarter.
Oh.
I'll take her from here, F. Go upstairs and change into your other pajamas.
Cammy, this is a real who's on first situation.
No, get smart.
I'm trying. I'm getting a dictionary.
Get smart.
Hold on.
Get smart.
Get smart.
Get a thesaurus. These books are getting heavy.
All right. One more guy's coming. Buck Henry.
Buck Henry.
Come on.
He's bringing Starbucks?
Oh.
I'm going to need it for Don Adams.
There's a big...
I told you she knew me.
Mel Brooks and Buck Henry, would you get smart?
Okay, 1 second. I need my calculator.
All right. Yeah, it was Don Adams was one of those guys.
Mr. Hefner, Mr. Kahn is at the door.
Oh, yeah.
That's a big one?
Yeah. Oh, forget about Scott. This is James.
I'm sorry, who? Is he related to Scott?
He's his dad, okay?
Oh!
Godfather, hello!
I love that pizza place. I thought they were only in the Midwest.
Jesus Christ, I'm this close to fucking 30-year-olds. This close!
Don't do it! Please,
don't do it!
I'm this close!
Don't do it!
Don't say it!
I swear to God, you keep going, I will bang a 31-year-old.
Missed it by that much.
I'll get smart, I promise!
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Missed it by that much.
Barbara Streisand apparently won't travel anywhere without her beloved dogs. This is according to Page Six. Now, hold on.
That's not a Babs type move. That is not the move of a super rich, white, Diva, no. I don't believe this story.
So she took her three dogs, Miss Scarlet, Miss Violet, and Fanny, on a 10,000-mile round-trip flight to watch her perform at London's British Summertime Concert on Sunday. A source told The Sun magazine there was no expense spared for these pets in the backstage area. They had free roam of her dressing room, a dedicated member of the staff pushing them in a buggy, walking them around, you know, wanting to make sure they didn't miss the show.
What do you think Brolin's doing?
I don't know.
She's on the
road.
Like, he's got to be like, first I'm going to do some donuts in the Raptor on the front yard. Then I'm going down to the mall and beating off.
mall in the basement?
At the hot dog on the stick.
Downstairs.
It's always staffed.
That's what I got. Loosely, these are my plans while you're on your tour.
Yeah.
I may mix it up and beat off in the Raptor at some point. But right now, this is what I got on my agenda.
Yeah.
I think men of a certain age just want to be left alone. You know what I mean? He's applying up.
I mean, I mean, what?
So this is her with the dogs in the car. She, by the way, in case you're questioning her love for these animals, in 2018, she revealed that she cloned Miss Scarlet and Miss Violet from her other dog, Samantha, who she was devastated when Samantha died. Mm. So she cloned Samantha and made Miss Violet and Miss Scarlet.
You guys, I've always had this sort of theory that we just have X amount of whatever in us. And like, I'm sure Babs is really super shitty with her hair person and her makeup person and the town car driver and everything. Why are they so saccharine sweet with the dogs? Like, why does it go so hard with the dogs? Like, full Leona Helmsley. Or
Karl Lagerfeld.
Marge Schott.
That's right.
Loved her St. Bernard. It was horrible to everybody. It was like racist and horrible to the players and everything.
But she loves Shotzi.
Well, dictators are sort of known for that too, right? I mean, didn't...
Yeah, they all go...
Every Bond villain.
No.
They go super hard with the animals. Like, yeah. It's like, I don't know why. Like, everyone who's nuts for PETA is douchey and dicky to be around. Like, they don't like humans that much.
Do they secretly know that they're douchey and dicky and they're, like, paying off a spiritual debt? You know what I mean? Like, being nice to an animal?
I don't know. I think there's a certain, like, I feel like... I don't know. I'm good with Phil, and I like Phil, but I don't go crazy with him. I save that a little more. Like, I only have...
For your cars?
So much of my... Oh, yeah. I only have so much of my loving cup. You know what I mean? I can go...
It's finite.
Give a little to Phil, give a little to kids, give a little to cars, and if there's anything left over, I give a little to Lynette at the end.
Oh, that's nice.
But if I went full Phil all the time, I don't think I'd be cool to Olga.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
That's the trade-off.
It's the whack-a-mole game.
Yeah, I think there's some of that.
Yeah.
Overcompensation or whatever, but anyway. We're rolling. Driving the Raptor.
At home, and pantsless.
Made time to tell me, got a two-year-old Raptor so we get the V8 in there, not the V6 with the turbo in it. The fuel-efficient one. You know, the one that's better for the environment. Mm-hmm. All right, let me see. Let me hit the Castrol Edge, stronger under pressure. That's right, got that V8 in that Raptor. You're brawling, you need some Castrol Edge. Fluid titanium transforms under pressure. Keeps the metal apart and stops it from the power-robbing friction. Three times the nude bomb. Three times stronger than leading full synthetic. It's Castrol Edge. All right, one more, Gina Grad.
All right.
Dana Gould's coming in tomorrow.
Yes.
Wow. We got to get some Huel's Jewels ready for Dana.
It's been too
long. Makes me laugh so goddamn hard.
Last time, I believe he said, as Huel, you'll pollute your bloomers.
We got through one clip.
Yeah, right. All right. Well, Fox News reports that an Illinois woman was arrested for allegedly driving her SUV while her daughter sat in an inflatable pool on the roof of the car. But she had a very good reason for it. 49-year-old Jennifer Yeager was pulled over Tuesday afternoon by police after she was seen cruising in an Audi Q5 with two kids riding in the pool on the roof. She told officers she was driving back from her friend's house where the pool was already inflated and she needed the girls to hold it down so it didn't fly off the top of the car.
Which was a good reason.
Yeager was charged with two counts of endangering the health or life of a child, two counts of reckless conduct, and failure to secure a passenger between 8 and 16. She was taken to the police department and released after posting bond. But she had a reason.
She wasn't drunk?
No.
This is one of those cases where you could wish you were drunk.
Yeah, she's like, okay, I'm going to go 8 miles an hour, this and I just need you to hold on.
It was a sober decision.
I know I brought this up a lot, but she's got to move to Spain.
Pamplona?
That's right. That's right, because you could say, understood, this is risky behavior. Right. But, officer, do you have daughters?
I do.
Okay. Let me ask you, what would you rather they do? Sit on top of this Audi SUV while I slowly and carefully take side streets back to my home, or put them in front of some bloodthirsty Brahmapals who only can see red and will gore them all the way down the street? Well, I'm giving you a decision.
Well,
and once you've arrived,
you know,
you write a ticket.
I'm tearing this up.
Yep.
You made a great point.
This is why everyone needs to move there. Yeah. I'm sort of with, yeah. That's probably,
you like her?
It's a little edgy.
Yeah.
It's taken a little too far. I tell you,
the nice car.
Yeah.
The only happy part of my childhood was once in a while, we would go over Coldwater Canyon and down to this little Beverly Hills park right across the street from the Beverly Hills Fire Department, which used to have like a jogging track around it or right next to it as well. I don't know if you guys ever do this, but like I walk whenever I see a fire department, like when I see one in Pacoima or Watts or something, I go, ugh, hate to have to work there. But once in a while, you'll see one in Monterey, nestled up in the hills. There's one in Beverly Hills
fork in the road.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a one upper. We walked with Tessa, we walked into the one on Babo Island.
That's what I'm saying.
That's the peak. That's
right.
The best.
That is no Fort Apache, the Bronx. No. See, there's a lot of range. But it's like military bases. They go, oh, where are you at? We're at Shit Mush, North Carolina. And it's like other people are going to Maui and they're based in different places. Like, why not?
San Diego.
Fiji.
But we'd go up and over Coldwater Canyon. And when we would sort of coast it down, because there's a VW bug that couldn't gather any speed, always take that canvas soft roof and slide it down. And my dad would just let me and my sister just stand on the passenger seat. We'd just stand on it, you know, arms out, Leonardo DiCaprio style. And he'd just go coasting down the back. Woo, feel the air and in my hair. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. No one ever tumbled out.
Well, to kind of be fair to the old man, this seatbelt, I don't think the car had seatbelts, and it didn't even have a latch on the seat. If anyone remembers those old VW bugs, you just flip the seat forward and it just fall forward.
Right.
It didn't have a headrest.
Right.
And it didn't even have a unlatch it kind of just flop. You know, when you sat in it, it stayed back. Yeah. But then when you got out and said someone in the backyard, someone back seat, just push it forward.
How much more dangerous was standing? Not very.
Irresponsible driving used to be so much more fun. Like, I think I told this years ago. Uncle and aunt of mine, different uncle and aunt, had a pickup truck with the top cover of the camper, and it was like carpeted, and then my brother and I
go in the back,
and now this is a pickup truck in the back while they're driving the freeway and lie on the wheel wells, and they would occasionally just jerk the car and knock us off the wheel wells.
Yeah.
Oh, so much. That was one of the happiest memories of my childhood.
Yeah, throwing people around in the back.
Yeah, it's good family fun.
Because I'd be driving along for a good, 2-3 minutes, all of a sudden, jerked
nice
the left,
and comfortable.
Falling, rolling all over the back.
Yeah.
Wildly irresponsible, but hilarious.
But the simple, my kids will never ride in the back of a pickup truck when that used to be a sort of normal mode of transportation. All right, let's bring it home.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news. You'll pollute your bloomers.
Gina Grad!
That was the news with Gina Grad.
Well, do me a favor and take the Podcast One survey. PodcastOne.study takes a couple of seconds, and the first 125 people are going to get themselves a little gift certificate to restaurants.com, and someone's going to get a $100 Amazon gift card. So takes a second. PodcastOne.study. Check that out. Live shows everywhere. Go to AdamCarolla.com. Laughs with Bald Brian. Tickets at laughswithbaldbrian.com. That'll be November 2nd. It'll be at a really cool venue. Max Zapata, remind me to write down, Against All Odds, the movie. We'll show you a couple of those scenes. That is the Avalon.
And Dana's in tomorrow. He'll be at the show.
Oh, good. Yeah. Oh, Dawson. Sorry. Booze and Book Club.
Yeah, tonight at 10E, we got Mike McGowan, the guy who did 30 years as an FBI undercover agent. He was framed by another FBI guy for stealing $200 million in heroin.
Oh, that guy.
That guy.
He's been in.
He's there tonight at 10E. I'll be reading from his book, Ghost. There'll be some people from Balboa Entertainment there because Stallone's going to play him in the movie.
Oh, my God.
And it's going to be a good time. Corolla drinks, signature mangria cocktails will be served. And a good time had by all at 10E, starting at 7 tonight. You will pollute your bloomers tonight.
Well, Balboa Island may be a good place to set up a fire department.
That's right.
But Rocky Balboa, that's
do.
A better guy to hang with. Kevin Falconer, there you go. I want to thank him for coming in, and you can check out... I'm not going to plug Comic-Con. I don't endorse it. But go to the website, sandiego.gov. Until next time, this is Adam for Kevin and Gina and Bald saying mahalo.
Yeah, baby. What do you mean? What's the problem, baby?
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Subscribe to Take an E for a weekly dose of inspiration and motivation. Click the link at adamcarolla.com. Also, subscribe to Carolla Classics, hosted by Chris Laxamana and superfan Giovanni. Plus, get your monthly nut on at CarollaDrinks.com. Tickets and info on all the live podcasts, Mangaree events, books, movies, and more. Go to adamcarolla.com. And stay tuned for AP News.